You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
And it is quite the show today. I am solo today, well, obviously with Miguelito, but I'm excited about today's show because we have an incredible guest that is on the wide shot, but it's not on the solo. It'd be weird if he was also in my ISO. But I'm absolutely honored. Welcome to the show. My name is Christian Polanco, but you are here to just witness something awesome with an incredible guest that I'm a huge fan of. And we have a lot of connections. We have a lot to discuss. You've seen him on Ted Lasso. He has a solo show coming out really, really soon. So go see that. But everybody, please give a warm round of applause to Brendan Hunt. Brendan, what's up, man?
Hello, Christian.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute honor. This is really cool. Obviously, I think a lot of people know you, and I feel like, especially with the hat, walking down the street, you're like almost always in character. The last few years have been pretty wild, but just walking through New York, are you getting, hey, Coach Beard, what's good? What's up?
New York has been, perhaps predictably, very chill.
Okay.
Anywhere else I go, not chill. Not chill at all.
That's what the New Yorkers are. We're not gonna, it's almost, but if we are excited to see you, you're bothering us. Like, why are you in our space? Why are you making me feel something?
Has a flow. You're fucking up my flow.
Without a doubt. I'm honored that you're here. You have a solo show happening at the Soho Playhouse, right?
Yes, sir.
And I just want to give you an opportunity to just let people know about it being on a very popular hit show, and I know there's always a lot of passion projects, a lot of things. There's something about on stage and live performance, especially as a stand-up comedian, that doing filmed projects is not always the same. But getting to do this, what was the inspiration? Why now?
Before Ted Lasso, I was always doing a lot of theater and the occasional solo show and stuff.
Yeah.
This is one of those where, like, I just kind of feel the compulsion based on, like, kind of what the story is. There's not much soccer at the show. Sorry.
Okay. Well,
sorry.
Yeah, but heads up. Let everybody know.
But there is a tinge of Ted Lasso, because what happened was... as we're finishing season 3, but we're taking like a writing break, and it's
called it was called the writer's strike.
Oh, that was still to come, my friend. We're writing the show, and Jason gets these texts from the manager of the Foo Fighters. Now that weekend was going to be the gigantic Taylor Hawkins Memorial All-Star Tribute Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's getting texts from the tour manager of the Foo Fighters, and they're like, "Hey, we're rehearsing for the show, like 15 minutes away from where you guys are." And Jason's like, "Oh, okay. Well, we got work to do." Like, well, here's the thing: there's also a big special guest who's playing the show. Is not going to be announced until the night, and it's Paul McCartney. And Jason's like, "Oh, well, boy, all right,
yeah. Sure. I heard him."
And remember when I said you're a 15 minute walk away? Well, Paul starts rehearsing in 15 minutes, and would you like to come over and bring some friends? And like, so I'm a huge Beatles fan.
Was that an impersonation of Ringo?
No, that's me. sadly, it was just me. And so I go over there, or we're going over there, and like, we don't know if we're going to meet Paul McCartney, but I am terrified. I'm fraught because, like, I don't want to be someone who, you know, meets. Am I allowed to swear in this show?
Yeah, go for it.
I don't want to be someone who meets Paul McCartney and fucks it up. You know.
Right.
And so I have all this family history with the Beatles from literally my first memory, you know, through like the birth of my son. But I can't talk to Paul McCartney about that. And so, but what that did was it pushed it all down, and now it has to come out. And in the show, I tell everyone there all the things I could not tell Paul McCartney.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So, you know, I might end up doing a solo show with all the things I couldn't tell Brendan Hunt. I'm quite excited to meet him. but that's awesome. All right. So you did mention Ted Lasso and the final, I'm not going to say final season, because who knows what the future holds. But as a fan of the show, I think Ted Lasso came out in a very interesting time, right? Obviously, during the pandemic, it felt like a lot of people felt like it saved their, you know, lockdown or something like that. It gave them a sense of hope and sanity. It was just it was so incredibly charming. And then I've heard you on other shows talk about this, about, you know, everybody, once they fell in love with the show, they were just like, when's the next one? When's the next season coming out? And I can understand how, you know, it's very taxing to put on a show like that. It's obviously a huge cast, a lot of work writing it. I have friends that are writers on the show. Jamie Lee is a comedian friend of mine. And I'm as a fan, I just want to talk about the last season, where I've genuinely felt like I felt the uncertainty of the, like, is there going to be another season, mm-hmm. right? We did get the tease of, like, the women's team, the Richmond women's team. But there was something to, like, it was wrapped up. It was wrapped up in a way where I'm just curious, what was your perspective in rewatching it, mm-hmm. of, like, did it feel okay, of like, if it is the end, did it feel all right? Did it settle and be like, okay, we close that chapter?
Yeah, you know, I mean, here's the thing, is like, years ago when we were putting the show together, we, you know, before we met Bill Lawrence, before we got hooked up with Apple, me and Joe and Jason always saw it as the three-part thing, and we were following the model of the UK Office of six episodes,
yeah.
movie. And so we kind of always had an ending in sight. And we were always going to, you know, get to that point. Now, turns out, along the way, there were, surprisingly, a lot of people who started watching the show,
yeah,
who don't want it to end. And they're quite strident about it, actually.
Right. They want, like, I think as the American audience started loving the show more and more, it started feeling like, well, this is going to be Grey's Anatomy, right? Where we go for 45 seasons, Days of Our Lives, of so far. Like, you're never going to end it, because I love these characters so much. But there's something flattering to that, because, you know, they always say, especially as comedy writers and producers, they always say, like, you keep the audience sort of wanting more. But you kept them. You gave them a hit of, like, the absolutely most addictive drug, and we're like, hey, we ran out. What are we going to do? So it's a difficult thing to balance, but I'm sure there's a lot of thought behind it.
Yeah, it's just that we were just committed to this, like, journey, and then, you know, it's like, all right, we're going here, and like, what you all want us to do? What it's like you're at a party, like a big party, and you're bringing drinks to someone, but on your way to bringing drinks, someone's like, Christian, and you're like, hey.
Right.
Oh my god,
you're stuck in this combo.
I haven't seen you in so long. It's just that this drink contains the antidote. I gotta get it over there. You know. You know, we still had to, like, get to where we're going. But yeah, as you say, the door is not completely closed. You know, so we'll see if we, you know, we had to take the, like, just in case, you know, vibe in all directions. Like, you know, just in case it's the end, let's end it. And just in case it's not the end, let's throw in a few seedlings so we can sprout them later if we end up, you know, being allowed to.
Yeah, one thing, you know, we had Christo and Toheeb on the show a couple years ago, And then I also I was at MLS All-Star in Los Angeles, and Christo was there. I mean, just, dude, the guy, he can't walk 5 feet without somebody asking for a photo, and he was just so kind and gracious. But the, you know, I've interviewed a couple people from the cast, and just a cool thing about, you've, like, change these people's lives. I mean, it's like, you know, actors love a great opportunity, but there's something specific about this show that, again, people love the characters so much. I mean, in the conversations about who the characters, you know, would be, as far as like when just on paper, did you think at all that it would resonate this deeply with other just human beings who really just love these characters?
I mean, we were gonna be showing our show on a streaming service that didn't exist.
Right. You know,
we had no idea about any of it. But in terms of like, you know, changing folks' lives, you know, who've worked on the show, that is one of the great thrills of it is, you know, because like we didn't know any of these people before we started working on it. We never worked with any of these people before, yeah. Except you know, Jason knew Juno a little bit, and Brett had worked with Bill Lawrence a little bit. But Brett originally was a writer. He wasn't going to be cast in the show. And then
right.
he made the right moves to bring that in.
That's a great story, too. He was in the writer's room and was like, you know, I think I'm this guy. And just, you know, willed it, which is such a cool thing because he wasn't afraid to shoot his shot and ended up being one of the...
And he picked the timing right as well. Don't everyone in a writer's room go like, saying, like,
hey, guys, stop a second. You know what? I think I should play Dr. Carnacopus. Everyone was awesome. Like, there was not an asshole in the bunch. And if people are having positive things happen to them, it is largely because of who they are as people. And we were just very, very lucky to find them.
Amazing. I know our producer, Mike, his brother, had a question. And
he was just curious.
Is that your brother who lives in Nice?
No, he doesn't live there, but he was visiting there. Yeah, the same one. He wanted to ask.
Michael is wearing a Nice shirt, everybody. I'm not just randomly shouting out French beach town names.
You know.
All right.
But his big question was, what was your favorite episode to record? What was your favorite episode to film, like, as it was happening?
The Amsterdam episode, for sure. You know, I used to live in Amsterdam. That's where I fell in love with football. Joe Kelly and Jason Sudeikis also did shifts in Amsterdam at the same comedy theater called Boom Chicago. And it's just irrevocably part of the sort of origin DNA of Ted Lasso, even though Ted Lasso did not exist there or anywhere else until the NBC thing in 2013. But to be able to go back to this city that means so much to me and stay in a hotel for the first time. Like, I've been back to Amsterdam over and over again, but I'm always like on a friend's couch or Airbnb-ing. But, when you're working here, they put you up in one of those fancy hotels that you used to bike past drunk all the time. And that was, a unique and singular thrill. Yeah. One weird, like, inside baseball thing about it. So, you know, bike culture is very real in Amsterdam, and that's why we have it so much in the episode. And we knew we wanted to have this long, like, chat between... Roy and Jamie on bikes, because like that's, you know, the best part sometimes. It's like your bike, you've gone to some party that is you know, a half hour bike ride away, and you're biking back, and you're just chatting with each other. And we ask the Dutch crew, like, so how do you usually we assume you have a way to like light, you know, an entire bike ride. Mm-hmm. Like, oh no actually no, we don't. We've never shot one of those. Like, how could you have never shot one? That's the basis of Dutch life.
The bike's literally strewn all about Amsterdam.
So, like, we may or may not have invented how to light a nighttime bike scene in the Dutch film industry.
It's a classic scene. I mean, was there anything incredibly complicated? I guess I don't work in lighting, but it doesn't sound like it would be that crazy, right?
Well, you had to... They had these like inflatable lights, nylon ones, and they were on top of a van, and you know, you don't really aim those so much, you just kind of put them there, and then, you know, we just had to go back the whole time. But because it was such a long shot, you know, there was some complications to it that are above my pay grade, but but it was not as easy as we thought it would be, and it was very cool to like, you know, throw the Dutch crew a new challenge.
Amazing, That episode is very iconic, and you could tell as you were in character there, and you know, in every scene, you were also really happy doing the scenes. You know what I mean? I could tell there was a genuine joy. And then, I haven't performed. I've been to Amsterdam. I didn't perform stand-up. I performed a couple other places in Europe, but as a improviser and working in Europe, is it that? Are the Dutch similar to the Germans with like humor and stuff like that? Because I've heard that it can be, you know, a little bit, like, they don't necessarily always get the sarcasm. I don't know if the Dutch are the exact same, but what were the comedic sort of hurdles and adjustments to performing?
You know what it comes down to is whether or not you're in a country who, when they watch American or English television, whether it's subtitled or dubbed. In Germany, it's dubbed. In Holland, it's subtitled. So Dutch people have a much quicker intake on American and English comedy and inflections because they've heard it done as it's actually done.
Gotcha.
And they just speak incredible English. They speak it better than we do. It's irritating. And now, mind you, when you're doing comedy for them, they're drunk, and it will revert to English as a second language.
Sure, sure.
But that teaches you about, you know, commitment. You know, commitment on stage. Like, you've got to try to reach them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it was like a 300-seat theater in those days, and which for those of us at the time, that was like 300 people.
Yeah.
And they generally got it. But we also had to, like, I don't want to quite say pander to them. You know, like, we knew we were going to make fun of Dutch people, so, like, we had to make fun of Americans first.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was always key.
You got to be likable. Yeah. I've done stand-up in Dublin, and this is what I
How's their English over there?
You know what? It's a little difficult to understand, I'll be honest. You know what? The colloquialisms were, like, the biggest challenge for me because... I was there for, I was doing stand-up, but my brother is a professional handball player. So,
what?
But not like Olympic handball, uh-huh. like, which is soccer on the, you know, on a court.
What Mad Max handball? Like, what are we talking about?
Like squash, but with your hands. So you're hitting the ball with your hands instead of a racket. Right, so there was a big...
And there's professionals who do that?
That's everyone else's reaction to Brandon, whatever Christian tells us.
There's a huge tournament in Ireland, the World Championships, and they were, I mean, it must have been nearly 1,000 players of, like, different age groups and stuff like that. So that's what I was there for, and I would be watching the games, and Irish people would come up to me watching a match, and they'd be like, "Who you up for?" And I'm like, "What?" And I'm like... Yeah, who you up for? And I'm like, who? I understand the word you're saying, like, who are you up for? But I don't know what that means. And they're like, who do you want to win? I'm like, okay. But there was like a dozen of those where I'm just like, I feel like a stupid American. Yeah. I'm like, I know the words you're saying, but I literally, yeah. I don't know the cool Irish slang that's being thrown.
Are you challenging me to a fight? Are you?
It could have
been.
Are
we asking about gambling? what was happening right now?
But the cool thing I enjoyed about doing comedy there was that I got to learn. I feel this a lot with stand-up. When you watch other comics and you see what the audience is laughing at, you get a quick understanding of, like, the culture very mm-hmm. quickly. So in Ireland, there were a lot of issues with, like, austerity and stuff like that. So they were like bailouts. I forgot mm-hmm. this was in 2012 or something like that, and they were making fun of the Germans. And everybody. The fact that Germany bailed out the rest of the European Union financially, it was like the most hilarious thing. It was just like, yeah, we're a welfare state, like, who cares or whatever, they're paying for it or whatever. But you got to very quickly understand what the lay of the land was, even though mm-hmm. I was just there for like 2 weeks. But I imagine from a comedy perspective, you must have learned a lot about the culture of Europe. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people traveled from different parts of the continent to be there. But I wonder, what did you learn about comedy while you were performing there?
The commitment thing, you know, is really what you take away the most from there. Because when you have, and this touches, I touched on this a little bit in my show, because it's been charitably described as being like the Beatles in Hamburg. You know, you're getting your 10,000 hours, you're performing constantly, but yeah, it's English as a second language and they're drunk and you got to try to reach them. And so you have to be fully committed to every single scene, because if you drop it all, because you're literally trying to draw them in. They're not even facing the stage. You know, right. they're sitting sideways, they've got fucking dinner and beer. And like, okay. You know, like you've got to get them. And, like, not even just when you're doing the scenes or the improvs. Like, even when you're introducing the scenes and just talking to the audience, or when you are behind the person who is introducing the scene, like Everyone's got to be focused all the time, because every time we drop focus, we invite everyone in the audience to also drop focus. Okay. So it just trains you to keep your energy full and to play to the whistle.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I did improv for about 6 years at UCB.
Nice.
And I was in a indie group as well. I haven't said this name in years, but it was 8 dudes, and our team name was Tickles. and we would start every show, and we're like, hey, everybody. I would usually introduce them. We're like, hey, everybody, we're Tickles. And the team behind me, for some reason, they just made this choice one day. They used to go, before we started. And it was just surreal, but it was some of the most fun I ever had. Yeah. I think I just stopped doing improv because I was doing so much stand-up, and it was really the main thing I wanted to focus on. And then I started performing. We would do shows here and there, and I just noticed that my teammates were just so unbelievably good. And I was just like, man, I'm holding the team back by not contributing as much as I really should, because I was doing so much stand-up.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.
And by the way, I feel like we started without Alexis. Should we wait for Alexis to be here, by the way?
Alexis just strolls in the middle of the interview. You don't have to worry about
okay,
that.
Okay, cool. Because I was told Cooligans was plural. And I just I just want to...
Okay,
so
you
weird.
Know, Brendan, you are the second Cooligan. So congratulations.
Back up Cooligan today, yeah.
You passed the audition. Alexis is in London, and he's obviously... he's a big Arsenal supporter, so you are the replacement Arsenal supporter. I do want to ask you just your thoughts on this team. Had a little bit of a rut, for about a month or so, but a big win against Liverpool. But how do you become an Arsenal supporter? And then boom, how are you feeling about this this year?
Became an Arsenal supporter. I wasn't into soccer at all until I moved to Amsterdam. I had been vaguely cognizant of the 94 World Cup. And I was waiting tables at a restaurant in the 98 World Cup, where the down part of my shift happened to coincide with the main matches being played.
Yeah, yeah.
Our kitchen staff demanded that the World Cup be shown. I was like, all right, fine, okay, let's do it. But I was really kind of drawn in then a little bit, and the Dutch team in particular were really interesting to me because, not a lot of orange otherwise on this tournament. And Edgar Davids was like... Edgar Davids will really draw you in.
Yeah, of course.
in a big way. But yeah, 99, I moved to Amsterdam, and you can't stream any of your sports then. There's no broadband.
Yeah.
And Michael Jordan had retired anyway. So I was like, all right, soccer, I'll give you a chance. Go to a couple IX games. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Start following Holland a little bit. But eventually there's just not enough English language coverage of that. So I start drifting to the Premier League a little bit. And there was kind of a natural flow toward Arsenal because of Dennis Bergkamp and Mark Overmars. And so I'm watching some Arsenal games, they're fun. And then there was one day in particular, I'm with my aunt who's visiting, and we're crossing the Leidseplein, near where my theater was, and we go past the Sky Sports Cafe. And there's a game on, and I see from the score, and I'm at the point in becoming a soccer fan where you're like, they put the home team first.
That's the home. It's not at.
Okay, Chelsea 2, Arsenal nothing in the 70th minute. And my aunt, bless her heart, just gets it, and she's like, I'm gonna go to this internet cafe. Remember internet cafes?
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna check my email. All right, great. So
that's what you put a quarter in the computer for internet. I don't know if you remember that, kids.
So I watched the last 20 minutes of this game, and in that 20 minutes, Kanu scores a hat trick. With each goal being better than the last. That's not quite true. The second goal, the ball literally got caught in the mud and he kicked it in. But the third goal was borderline physically impossible. It came from a botched clearance. Somehow Ed Dehui, the Chelsea goalkeeper, who's just panicked by Kanu.
Yeah.
Like, he's scored two goals in the last, 15 minutes. And Ed Dehui, like, races all the way out to the to the right touchline. And he tries to clear it, but it just bounces off Kanu. And so Kanu then, from the corner, basically, swerves it in to the net as two different Chelsea defenders, like, do identical synchronized swimming lunges toward it. And it was like, well, shit, these are my guys.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Wow, look, Auntie's a gooner. Yeah, I mean, she just brought you on board. What a great... So, look, even talk about last year. It was just so kind of disappointing towards the end, in first place for a lot of the year. But, you know, Manchester City's going to Manchester City. But this year... it's closer. Manchester City is, I believe, tied on points right now. But do you feel it? Is it possible for Arsenal to do it this year?
It's possible. It is possible. You need to hope that the early season failings of Man City will last all season. But they tend to not fail the second half of the season.
Yeah, that sends me the issue. They were down 1 against in their last game and then ended up winning 3-1. Or whatever.
Yeah. So you got to hope for that. And the other key is, I think, is Martinelli. Martinelli has had a bit of a drought in this first half of the season. He's scored very few goals, but they're all big goals.
Mm-hmm.
But given his age and given what he did last year, I'm hoping for a reversion to mean. And like the second half of the season, he explodes. And he becomes the goal scorer that they should have picked up in the January window, but did not. Because the goal's got to come from somewhere, and I think they are overdue to come from him.
Okay, yeah. I'm an Everton fan, and I just if Arsenal could just gift us the 10 points that the Premier League deducted, it would be lovely. That'd be a kind gesture. If you're not gonna win the league, just give us the points. I mean, that's the kind thing to do. But yeah, it is a complicated sort of field.
Why does Arsenal have to give you the points? Yeah, 18 other teams.
Look, I'm just begging at this point, you know? I'm just like, please, sir. Listen, a couple of Premier League points, please. The other thing I wanted to ask. Yeah, I did see you mentioned obviously the Beatles and the solo show being about the Beatles, but you mentioned on Kimmel, mm-hmm. and about being an Anglophile. And you have a great story just about pretending to be British for like a whole summer or something like that for a summer job.
Yeah.
But what? How do you feel about it now? Is it like just like, are you proud of yourself? I'll be proud of yourself for keeping the bit going for that long. I don't even know if I could do that. It's like, a method acting at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it literally was just a spur of the moment decision as I'm walking to this job interview. And it was because, a friend of mine worked for this company too, but she was quitting. Gotcha. But she wanted to, like, introduce me. So she takes me to, like, the main, tour stand at the then Sears Tower. But I don't talk to anybody because they sent me to the office. And then she's like, all right, you go to the office down here. So I'm walking by myself. And I'm like, well, they don't know who I am. They didn't hear me talk.
Damn.
For all they know, I could be English.
Wait a minute.
And then I go in, I'm like, am I going to do this? Am I going to do this? And like, I go in, the lady's on the phone, and she gives me one moment, please, blah, 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 blah. Okay, how can I help you? And I'm like, may I have an application, please?
It's just a great, and you were, I believe you were 16 or 17 at the time?
Yeah, it was the summer I turned 17, yeah.
So, I mean, the confidence to do that is like, I remember myself, I wouldn't have, even if it was like a girl asking, I'm like, no, I'm not going to be, I'm just going to be shy and nervous. Because I didn't start doing comedy until I was about 23, 24. So I wasn't like a theater kid. Mm-hmm. I went to school for computer science and stuff like that. So that's why I kind of respect it so much. It was just the recklessness of it all. But then to be like, okay, this is who I'm going to be for, because sometimes when you go from like junior high school to high school, you're like, these people don't know who I am. I'm going to be the Fonz. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be cool. That's what I thought. I was going to be like, I'm not going to go in with this shy little virgin or whatever, which is Kids, it's okay to be a virgin at 14. Trust me. don't let anybody shame you for that.
Just let it happen. Don't make it happen. Let it happen. It's
okay.
Gonna be fine.
Even in college, like me, it was still okay. Even though that's
cosine. Cosine.
That's when I started getting bullied. But it's don't let them win. so I love that. But you mentioned being an Anglophile, the Beatles are a big part of the solo mm-hmm. show, and the. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, a Dominican kid, immigrant family. The Beatles weren't playing, you know, very often. I really had to search and find the Beatles. But when I found the Beatles, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, everybody's talking about these guys, and they seem to be pretty awesome. But your interest with the UK and just being mm-hmm. and the English, were the Beatles just a huge part of that, or were there other more kind of influences?
Beatles were the first and biggest foundational block of that. But then I saw on a school field trip, I saw a production of Midsummer Night's Dream that absolutely blew the doors off me. I was like, what? And then got really into Shakespeare and like took a Shakespeare summer workshop during high school once. And, you know, on PBS on Sunday nights, they would have this run of English shows. The first one I didn't watch, I think it was either Upstairs, Downstairs, or Have You Been Served? But that was clearly dumb, and I wasn't going to do that. But then it was Monty Python, which I didn't always get, but I was always fascinated by.
Sure, sure.
Dave Allen at Large. Dave Allen was I believe, Northern Irish comedian who would basically just sit in a chair facing the audience with a whiskey and a cigarette and tell jokes that probably would get him canceled now, and do the occasional sketch. And then Doctor Who. All the rest was build up to Doctor Who. Like, Doctor Who was my shit more than any of that other stuff. Just didn't really realize it, but I was becoming an Anglophile. Not to the degree of liking the royal family. Like, my mom watched The Royal Wedding, and I had zero interest in that.
Yeah.
But that just kept on going. And then, you know, like, I'm of Irish descent, and I lived in Amsterdam. But when I went to London for the very first time, nowhere else have I felt more at home more quickly than walking the streets of London. And this was like 2000. I really, really love it there. But of course I do. I've been practicing for it since I was 12.
Okay. I've been prepping for this moment my entire life. No, I feel that way about Ireland. When I left Ireland, while I was in Dublin, I did this tour of Kilmainham Jail, which is a prison where, you know, the English, I think, had taken over, and like they had imprisoned a lot of Irish rebels. Mm-hmm. And I go to the store. It's obviously very, very sad and disturbing, but they filmed In the Name of the Father. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Was that the prison where that took place?
Yes. So I saw that film, and I just was like, I just sort of immediately connected with Irish culture and this the sort of the rebellious nature.
That movie's great.
And then I was just obsessed with every Irish film, as they say.
Did you like the film?
That was another one I had to be like,
so,
what?
Yeah, you couldn't understand that, but you were just like, this is it for me, bro.
So the Wind That Shakes the Barley, My Left Foot, I just went on this binge of Irish films, and I just fell in love with the culture. So it's always been a place that I'm like, I gotta go back, you know, even though while I'm in Ireland, I don't necessarily look like I'm Irish. And honestly, the most interesting thing, and it's kind of sweet, but the Irish there are like, you can tell they haven't met many people of color, and there's a giddiness when they talk to you. There's a little bit of like, he's a person of color, he's also from New York, I gotta be on my best, like I gotta impress this young man. And it was a lot of, it was very sweet, but I'm like, you know, watch more TV. I don't know what to say. Find it. There's black Irish people. We got to do it. Okay. A couple other things. Wrap up. I just want to mention this. Obviously, I'm wearing the Grant Wall Jersey from Olive in York. Grant Wall, also a friend of yours. Also, yeah, you know, and there was a great moment in Ted Lasso where you are reading his book. And I know the books that you were reading were obviously a big part of the show as well. But obviously, you know, we've spoken about Grant for obviously a very long time on this show. And obviously his passing was very, very difficult. But you can talk about your relationship with him and friendship and how you got to know him.
Sure. You know, as I say, in 98, for that World Cup, I was not into things yet, but I was an avid reader of Sports Illustrated, and they had a big World Cup article that successfully predicted France to win. And that was notable to me. Like, France? France? Yeah. Like, because if you're not into soccer, like, French and athlete didn't go together at all. Yeah, like, what is one French athlete you've ever heard of in any other sport before
that? We're very biased.
Yeah. I mean, this is geographical. I understand. They are dancers and lovers and cat burglars. Right, they're not athletes.
They eat cigarettes. That's what I know.
So, like, all right, okay. Well, I'm sorry, who wrote this? Grant Wall. Okay, a guy named Grant Wall. And then I just remember that name, and like over the years was always reading him wherever he was. And as we get into Ted Lasso time, he invites me and Jason to be on his podcast, and we have a nice time doing that. It turns out him and Jason went to rival high schools.
Basketball rivals. Kansas City, yeah.
And then he was in London for the big – England USA women's match.
Yeah,
that was like, you know, European champions versus world champions. Mm-hmm. And
England won that game.
They did. Yeah. It was a bit of a tough week.
Yeah.
for the U.S. national team. The next day he came to Richmond, like basically on his way to the airport, and I just walked him around Richmond, and it's the one and only time that I got to meet him. But it was a great day. Like, you know, showed him all the stuff. Had a beer at this site. Had a beer at that site. He came to the house and met my kid, and yeah, and then a few months later, he's gone.
Yeah, it's obviously a very difficult. I think the good thing, and I was at his memorial and just hearing all the impact he had, and so many positive stories of so many people he helped, and we were that as well. He was just always kind of just looking out for us, helpful, either recommend people. I honestly think we're on Meadowlark Media. I don't think we would be on Meadowlark Media if it wasn't for Grant Wall and stuff like that. So, I just wanted to get your perspective as well. You mentioned Kansas City real quick. I just wanted to say the 2026 World Cup, obviously coming to the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Kansas City has two sites, but I believe Chicago has zero. Have you and Zunakis been any sort of talking point, because that Chicago's left out and Kansas City get two venues?
It's because it's been known for a while Chicago's okay. gonna have any, and like it would be reciprocal talking points, because the one thing would be like, we got World Cup games, and it's like, yeah, well, we have a city government with less corruption. deal with FIFA.
We can't say no corruption. Just less. That's as good as it gets in this country. All right. The last question I have for you, and I'll let you go. This is just from one of our fans. This is Gully Squad. This is
Alexis. Get in here, buddy. You're gonna miss it. Alexis.
He asked, removed it. Okay, this is from Luke Sturgio. He asked a question, obviously, as Coach Beard, what's your beard care routine? Do you have one? I don't know if anybody's ever asked you about that.
But. I do. I do beard oil every morning, and my very first day on Ted Lasso, my makeup lady, the wonderful Nikki Springall, she started brushing my beard with this big-ass brush. I was like, oh, should I be doing that? She's like, yeah, of course you should be doing that. And at the end of the season, she gave me that brush, and I still have that brush today.
Amazing.
And I brush it, because also I can go full, like, I'm not going to do it here because I got meetings, but I can go full Jack Black with it at this point. It's getting good and long. But as long as you can just guide it down, it straight, then you're going to be able to get into a lot of parties that wouldn't otherwise want you there.
I'm not as familiar with beard care. It's not really been a thing I've had to think about, but It's cool to know, you know, that that was one of the things you stole from set.
technically, yes.
Well, Brendan Hunt, this has been so cool. Can you just mention where people can get tickets for the solo show and all that stuff?
You bet. It's playing Soho Playhouse. If you go to the Soho Playhouse website, that'll be your best bet. I think it's on also, like, might be on TKTS.
Okay, yeah.
Or one of the other, like, TKTS knockoffs that I should know the name of, and I'm sure are wonderful organizations that do a lot of good work for the consumer. But Soho Playhouse website will get you there. I think we're sold out Friday. We're definitely not sold out tonight. I don't know if this goes out in time, but Saturday is close to selling out. Okay. And it'll eventually come around, you know, the whole country at some point, because it's going very well. But I got to have a baby first. So I'm jamming all this stuff in before we have our baby in March.
Okay. I've never heard of, you know, lovemaking as called jamming it in. but hey, man, whatever works.
Hey, man. We all spell romance differently.
You got to tell your kids about the birds and the bees somehow. But no, congratulations. The show is called Brendan Hunt, The Movement You Need. I have a 10-month-old at home, so I'm in the middle of learning a lot. And he's standing and doing all this other stuff now. So there's a lot of, you know, I just baby-proofed the outlets and all that other stuff. So I know exactly what you're going through. But congratulations. Brendan Hunt, The Movement You Need. Go check it out. Incredible solo show. Shout out to Brendan Hunt. Brendan, thanks so much for joining me, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.